I'm going to discuss, obviously, very briefly each, bits of papers written over the last year or so with Deneff, Douglas, Floria, Grassi, Arcani, Hamed, Demopoulos, Kashani, Poor, DeWolf, Gary, Betts, and Taylor, and really in a line of work that goes back a few years to work done with Kalashwande and Trivedi. Okay. There's by now, in my opinion at least, significant evidence that string theory gives rise to what's been called a vast landscape of metastable vacua, vacua that aren't exactly stable, but can live for a long time in string units. And these manifest various possibilities for the gauge group matter content, cosmological term, and other quantities of physical interest. Now, practically speaking, how do we know this? Why are we thinking about this? Well, in my case, the reason I think about this is that the techniques that go into proving this assertion, which is quite interesting, are identical to the techniques which you use to produce string compactifications with stabilized moduli. Now, there's been a lot of philosophy discussion. I'm sure we'll get more of it tonight. But whatever one's philosophical feelings about the existence of the lack of a single, unique, beautiful solution to our theory are, the latter problem, the problem of moduli stabilization, is a technical and presumably well-defined one. It's very concrete, and it has to be dealt with regardless of what you feel about the existence of a landscape. The existence of moduli is highly constrained by experiments, depending on how they get their mass and where they get it. They cause fifth forces, which aren't observed, equivalence principle violations, which aren't observed, disastrous consequences for BBN, which are obviously not observed. Okay, so the theory typically comes with hundreds of moduli fields, and something happens to them. Now, also, there's increasing evidence that inflation really did happen in the early universe and generate the density perturbations that condense to form galaxies. And in theories with extra dimensions, in the absence of stabilization of, for instance, the volume of the extra dimensions, or in string theory, the string coupling, inflation just can't occur. It's easy to show this. So any string scenario for early universe cosmology, if it's going to rely on inflation, has to address this issue. So what I'm going to try and describe in my talk is what I think we know about producing such stabilized string compactifications. And from my perspective, it's most natural to divide any models you might construct into three different classes based on how they relate to supersymmetry. Those where supersymmetry is broken below the scale, the Kaluza-Klein scale of the extra dimensions, at some mass much smaller than 1 over the radius, okay, are basically theories where we expect a four-dimensional n equals 1 effective description to be valid as long as effective field theory applies, which is something that I take as an axiom. Okay. And they'll be my focus. This is what I thought about and what I'll talk about. But we should always keep in mind that however much we know about these, there are in principle at least two other potentially very large classes of models that could be of interest for our world. Those where the Susie breaking scale coincides with the scale of the extra dimensions, and those where in fact there isn't even supersymmetry at the string scale, like the O16 string. Now, even within this class of supersymmetric models, we need to pick a corner of the famous M-theory star to make any concrete progress. Although the different corners may be dual to one another, the real concrete techniques that you use in any given corner vary as you switch corners. So here's the M-theory star. I think actually in the end, if you work hard enough, it may not matter so much, at least for qualitative details, which corner you pick. But I'm going to stick to type 2b and type 2a. In my opinion, type 2b is right now the most well-developed picture for a variety of historical reasons. And then type 2a, I'll argue, may be the place where we get the simplest picture of some classes of models. So the type 2b vacuum have already been discussed here many times. You can either work in the F-theory description, where the data is a Calabi-Yau fourfold, or in a type 2b description, where you have a Calabi-Yau threefold, and then to break the supersymmetry, you orientifold it by some, say, Z2. Now, the picture that comes out of that is by now quite standard. I'll work in the 3-7 class of 2B orientifolds, the ones that are related to F-theory. There's also a 5-9 class. In the 3-7 class, you can have D3 brains filling our space, and it points on the Calabi-Yau. You, in general, have 7 brains wrapping various 4 cycles in the Calabi-Yau, which I tried to denote there. And in addition, the 2B theory has 2 different 3-form field strengths, an NS and an RR 3-form. And in general, there are 3 cycles in M, and they can be threaded by flux of the 2 different 3-forms. Now, the moduli that enter in this problem at leading order are the complex structure of M, parameterized by some moduli Z alpha, the dilaton, the Kähler structure of M, parameterized by some rho I fields, and finally the moduli that move around the D3 brains and D7 brains, if there are such moduli. Now, when we turn on the fluxes, we get additional data that we have to choose to specify a model. They're quantized, and so for each choice, you a priori might get a super selection sector. And so given a basis for three cycles sigma A and M, you choose one integer parameterizing the NS flux and one integer parameterizing the RR flux. It's not true that all choices are valid, or we would immediately conclude that there are likely to be an infinite number of vacua. In fact, there's a tadpole condition that constrains the choices of little h and little f that you're allowed to make. And it's roughly of the form, and all coefficients are wrong here, the integral of h wedge f over the manifold plus the number of three brains has to add up to some total amount of negative three brain charge that's been introduced in the construction, which I've called NO3. In F-theory examples, in fact, that NO3 can be computed from the Euler character of the fourfold in a standard way. So now, given a choice of all the data, the Calabi-Yau, the brain content, and the integers, you get a four-dimensional N equals one effective field theory, a supergravity. It's a supergravity of a special type called the no-scale type that was discussed in the early 80s first. And the superpotential in this supergravity, leading order, is just this flux-generated superpotential computed by Gukov et al. That takes the fluxes, adds them with a coefficient of the dilaton for the NS flux, and wedges with the holomorphic three form. It's obvious from this expression, if you know a little bit about Calabi-Yau, that since omega depends on all of the complex structure moduli, W then, if you choose generic enough fluxes, depends on all of the complex structure moduli. If you count the number of equations you'll then get by varying W to find critical points, you conclude that generally you should expect this to fix both the complex structure moduli and the dilaton, which appears there. Now, at this level, because it's a no-scale supergravity, I've been free to ignore the Kähler moduli. At the leading order, they in fact decouple from the problem I've just described. They're sitting there as flat directions that remain in the problem. So we can ask at this level of approximation, how many vacua are there still with these unfixed Kähler moduli? And the number, including the sum over the choices of these possible fluxes, which change the effective Lagrangian, is very large. Really, the crudest estimate due to Busson-Polchinski gives something that looks roughly like the O3 charge to the number of three cycles, and more precise estimates along the lines that Michael described in his talk this morning pretty much confirm that estimate as at least a crude first estimate. Now, a typical number here from fourfolds can be of order 100. A typical number here can be of order 100. And so a totally realistic number that comes out here in pretty explicit examples is order 10 to the 300. That's what I mean when I say there's a large number. Now, those weren't vacua yet, really, because they all contained extra fields that still had flat directions. And you could imagine, if you don't want your theory to have lots of vacua, that maybe the generic result is those fields always run off to infinite volume, and all these proto-vacua don't really give rise to vacua of the full theory. So how do you test that? Well, first of all, are there known further effects that will generate dependence on the Kähler moduli? And the answer to that question is in the affirmative, yes. In general, you can imagine that known effects give a non-perturbative superpotential for the Kähler moduli. By supersymmetric non-renormalization theorems, they're protected to all orders in perturbation theory. Now, the known non-perturbative effects that have arisen in this context include, first, a class of Euclidean D3 instantons first described by Witten, which in the F-theory or M-theory fourfold description come from M5 brains that are Euclidean. They're wrapping a sixth cycle in the Calabi-Yau fourfold. And that sixth cycle, according to Witten, should have a holomorphic Euler character or arithmetic genus 1. And if it's furthermore rigid, it gets its only contribution from H00 of the cycle, then that's a sufficient condition for it to contribute. You could also imagine a priori in the four-dimensional language that non-abelian instantons, instantons of gauge groups that come from the D7s, contribute. Then since the D7 gauge couplings depend on Kähler moduli, you get, again, a non-perturbative superpotential that depends on Kähler moduli. And it turns out if you analyze the circumstances where this will happen somewhat carefully, you find that there's a slight generalization of Witten's condition. This was pointed out on physical grounds in a paper we wrote with Gerlich, and mathematical analyses recently by Salina, by Kalosh and collaborators, and also by Tripathi and Trivedi are now generalizing Witten's condition and to the fully sort of general situation here. The result isn't known yet. I mean, the final result isn't known yet. Now, let's imagine that in that large set of approximate vacua, the ones that still had flat directions at the first step of my discussion, the Z alphas, the complex structure moduli, and the dilaton were fixed by the Gukov-Vafa-Witten superpotential. And let's further imagine, maybe somewhat optimistically, that they were fixed in a region where G string was small and where the evaluated W flux in the vacuum is some number that's small, called W naught. Okay, or really the thing that's relevant there is the scale of Susie breaking measured by the gravitino mass. Now, statistically, any crude analysis says this should be possible, and I'll say more about that in a second. Well, if that's true, if you find such vacua where in the Weeding approximation these facts held, and then you incorporate these extra effects, you conclude that you can produce a vacuum at large enough rho that the corrections to these effects from things we don't know about yet or from multi-covers to the instantons can be small, and then all moduli are fixed in a way that's self-consistent in the normal sense of effective field theory. So this is an old idea. It's the KKLT construction, and it's a very concrete proposal for constructing a landscape in string theory. So if you want to evaluate the question of whether string theory has such a landscape, you just need to find one in one corner. This is as good a corner as any to try and verify that. Okay. Now, there have been about 2 years of work in various directions related to this, and we now know a lot more than we knew 2 years ago. Okay. First of all, we know a very nice statistical theory of type 2B flux vacua developed by the group at Rutgers. And based on this theory, we know that the fraction of constructions where the flux superpotential stabilizes G string below some value G star just scales like the first power of G star. If you want G string to be below a tenth, you get a tenth of the vacua. And the fraction where W squared is less than epsilon squared scales like epsilon. If you want epsilon to be 10 to the minus 5, then, you know, you get that fraction of the vacua. Yeah. Sorry, it's epsilon squared there. Yeah, good. So 10 to the minus 10. Now, in examples, as I said, at the first step of the construction, the number of vacua can easily be of order 10 to the 300. So now you impose your rigid cuts, you want G string less than a tenth, and you want to kill, you know, all models where epsilon is bigger than 10 to the minus 5, which kills another 10 to the minus 10, and you conclude that your leading estimate is, again, that within error, the exponent of the number of models is 300. There are about 10 to the 300 models where you expect some kind of formal control, in other words, a huge number of models. So at least it looks, at this level of analysis of the effective field theory, like you really get rigid, stabilized models in large numbers. Now, there was a step in my construction where I assumed that certain non-perturbative effects exist. Their existence isn't unexpected, but you could ask, in what fraction of Calabi-Yau 4 folds or 2B Orienta folds are there really enough non-perturbative effects to fix the Kähler moduli this way instead of maybe in some other way? Okay, and well, it's a hard question. You know, there's some topological constraint. You have to stare at the data of the Calabi-Yau and try to count divisors and figure out whether they have the right properties or not. Some work by Deneth et al. Showed that in some simple class of fourfolds, those which have Fano threefold base in our elliptic, the number was 29 out of 92. You can take from that what you want. It looks to me like a number of order one. This is a lower bound because this was done with the strongest constraint proposed by Witten in 1996, which we now know is a little bit too strong. So the statistical considerations, together with this kind of explicit consideration, give very strong evidence that many models exist using this particular construction. And there are many other constructions you could try that would probably lead to some more conclusions. Now, you could ask, well, how do you know the statistics actually hold in the extreme regimes where you need them at very weak coupling or at very small values of W naught? Okay. And the easiest way to answer such a question is, of course, to just exhibit vacua explicitly. So why hasn't that been done? If there are 10 to the 300 models, why haven't we shown at least 10 to the 200 of them by now? Okay. And the reason is, of course, like with all such things, it's very hard work. Why is it very hard work? Well, even the first step of what I said, which is a perfectly well-defined math problem, pick integer fluxes, compute the superpotential, and stationarize it, is really difficult to carry out in practice because you first have to find an integral basis for H3, you know, in which you expand your forms, okay? And then you have to compute the periods in that basis or transform them into that basis from the one, the Picard-Fuchs basis, where they're naturally computed. And this exact problem was of central interest in studies of mirror symmetry in the early 90s. So very hardworking and intelligent people tackled it. And as far as I can tell, the end result of their work was really that models with about 2 or 3 moduli were completely solved, and then relatively incomplete results were obtained for models with many more moduli. Okay? So of course, one can do this explicitly, and I'll talk more about that, but you should understand that there's a computational problem here that's highly non-trivial, even if the result is generically expected to be clear. So we set out with the group at Rutgers to try and give a very simple example where this whole thing could be done completely explicitly, just to make sure that there is no sort of secret reason why this can never happen. Okay, and the model that we settled on actually is one whose close relatives have played a big role in phenomenological work, trying to build standard-like models. It's one of the simplest models you can imagine. It's type 2b on orbifold T6 mod Z2 squared, okay, which lifts to F theory on T8 mod Z2 cubed. It's a model that was first introduced a few months after orientifolds were invented by Gopakumar and Mukhi. And it has the characteristic that there are 12 different stacks of 4 D7 brains, which give rise to an SOH to the 12th gauge group. They actually give rise to no charged matter. So you have 12 different pure n equals 1 Yang Mills factors sitting there from the start. Now, this model, T6 mod Z2 squared, with the choice of discrete torsion that we make, has precisely 3 complex structure moduli. And in fact, all of them are inherited from T6. They're just the 3 tau moduli of the 3 T2s in the T6. And that's what makes this model so simple. Okay. There are also 3 untwisted Kähler moduli, and there are 48 blowup modes from the fixed curves of the Z2 squared action. Now, it turns out that if you know a little bit of algebraic geometry, which at least some of our collaborators do, that each blowup introduces its own divisor, which is rigid and has a holomorphic layer character 1. And so each such divisor contributes to the instanton superpotential. Witten's sufficient condition is satisfied. And that each untwisted Kähler mode appears in the Yang-Mills coupling of precisely 4 of the 12 D7 stacks. So each one is, in fact, getting 4 different non-perturbative contributions to a superpotential that depend on it. So the last step that you actually need to try and make an explicit model is then to construct the flux vacuum, and here's where the fact that we're basically working with a torus as far as the complex structure is concerned pays off a lot. The tadpole condition in this model is that the integral of H wedge F plus the number of D3 brains should be 28. And so a priori, it's clear the flux vacuum should be easy to classify in this model. The periods are trivial, and there are only about 10 to the 13 vacua expected. We've already seen that the D7 brains in this example have no moduli because there is no charged matter of the SOH to the 12th. We can also avoid ever introducing D3 brains and their translation modes if we just satisfy the tadpole fully with flux. Okay? So we're going to search for vacua that have slightly small W0, slightly small G-string, and a flux precisely equal to 28 units of D3 charge. Okay? And I should note as a parenthetical comment that might be relevant for further work, that while the number of vacua satisfying the open condition that H wedge F should be some number smaller than L, it satisfies some really simple properties. It scales like L to the B3, and it's a pretty continuous function as you crank up the maximum value of L. At a given desired value of this tadpole, it's very different. Okay, the thing that smooths out these distributions is summing over different values of L naught less than L. So if you want vacua at a fixed L tilde, the number of vacua can actually fluctuate wildly in some way that depends on integrality, depends on number theoretic considerations. Okay, and so, you know, as a picture of that, I can show you in a simpler example what that function does. Here's what I was calling L tilde. Here's the number of vacua. And you see that the number jumps around wildly as you change L tilde just based on details of the discreteness. But anyway, in this particular example, we did a computer search in some subspace of the set of 10 to the 13 models. We found some explicit vacua with H wedge F equal to 28. We computed the stabilized values of all moduli with G string at roughly a fifth. And the corrections to our results from effects that we know about, the loop corrections computed by the Beckers, Hawk, and Lewis, are estimated to be at the 1% level or so. So that's as explicit a construction as I've seen so far. And it at least gives me some faith that the statistical theory is not grossly misleading in the way that it's being used. Now, it would nevertheless be very interesting to carry through such work. Yeah. the thing that we constructed was a supersymmetric ADS minimum, and I'll say something about that in a second. I'll say something right at the end of this transparency. Okay, so it would be interesting to do such things in models with larger B3 and with more flux vacua. Okay, and of course the reason that we didn't is then you have to compute these periods and changes of basis that cause headaches. As Herman pointed out, the example that we constructed explicitly was a supersymmetric ADS minimum. Okay, now there were several ideas proposed for starting from such a construction with a slightly different amount of flux and lifting it to give it a sitter vacuum. One is to use a warped compactification of the class I studied with Giddings and Polchinski and adding antibrains, which are effectively D-terms, or just using imaginary anti-self-dual fluxes as proposed by others. And based on those grounds and the statistical theory, you also expect in general to find a sitter vacua. Why? Well, the number of vacua with a given Susi breaking F term scales like F to the sixth. Okay, so if you want an F term that's small enough that you trust the result, but large enough that it adds a significant positive vacuum energy, there's plenty of room to do this if there are a large enough number of vacua. Now, in this particular model, which was a toroidal orientifold, I don't know how to get a conifold point. And we didn't really try to construct such an F. But at the level of the ADS vacuum, the theory actually had no tachyons. It was stable strictly, not even using the Brighton-Loner-Friedman lowering of the stability bound. And so if one did find such an F, you could lift it. But I'm not sure such an F would exist in that model. It's a pretty simple model. Did that answer your question, Herman? Okay, so to waffle a little bit, in the 2B limit, it seems that we have an increasingly precise, but still pretty crude, picture of a very large set of metastable vacua, based both on explicit proposals and constructions, and also on statistical arguments. And it's pretty clear that the two complement each other, and that if you go and try to make a construction work, and you need certain ingredients to be plausible or possible within your theory, one good way to convince yourself that they are or aren't is to develop a statistical argument. And if you want to know whether your statistical arguments are true, the best way to verify them is to go make an explicit construction and see that its predictions are borne out. Okay? But anyway, combining these sets of arguments allows us to intelligently discuss how rare or common a given model building requirement may be. So maybe in some cases we can convince ourselves that the requirement can never be satisfied. A crucial feature here in all of the tuning I discussed to get small g string and to get small w naught is that in the flux vacuum type 2b, the number of moduli fixed is basically B3 real moduli. It's the complex structure moduli plus the dilaton, and they're all complex. Okay. But the number of fluxes is 2 times B3 because you have both H3 and F3. And so the number of fluxes is actually much greater than the number of moduli that they're fixing when you have any large B3. Yeah, so what? Well, let's consider more abstractly a case where there's some number n of moduli fixed by k different effects that add in this linear way, k different fluxes. So in this particular case, k was equal to 2n in type 2b. Okay. And let's say that you want the moduli fixed at some point. I don't care which point, but you want them fixed. So say the point we call phi I star. Well, that imposes n constraints. dv d phi at phi I star has to vanish. Okay, so at the very least, there are n equations you have to satisfy. You could then try to impose more for positivity of the mass matrix. But at the very least, there are n equations. Now, in a continuous flux approximation of the sort that goes into statistical theories, you can just solve these n equations for n of the fluxes, as long as you have at least n fluxes. Okay? And then, you see, what you've done is you found a vacuum at the point in moduli space, and you have k minus n fluxes left to tune the physics. And so in particular, if k is bigger than n, there's at least one flux left to try and tune the cosmological constant, which is just one number. Now, in 2b, k minus n is equal to n, and the tuning available actually, you know, kind of bears out this intuition. It leads to very broad distributions. And in particular, that feature of type 2b is why all values, I mean, I'm being a little rough, but roughly speaking, all values of the cosmological constant, all values of G string, and all values of W naught are pretty easy to get. Now, you can easily imagine abstractly systems where the number of vacua is very large, but the effective k over n is smaller. Okay? And you should then expect distributions to be more peaked than the ones in type 2b for the same reason I said before, you have less fluxes left to tune with. Now, it turns out that this phenomenon of very peaked distributions, very different from the ones that have shown up in the statistics of 2b vacua, shows up in very simple quantum field theory examples of landscapes. And this led us, with Arkani, Hamed, and Demopoulos, and maybe Nima will talk about this later if he both appears and gives a talk about this, to the concept of a friendly neighborhood. And what we meant by friendly neighborhood is merely that what one would really like if one were doing wishful thinking and nothing else is to explain only the cosmological constant using statistical considerations, and then hope that for some reason, as you scan over the cosmological constant, not much else varies. That's what we meant by friendly. Okay. So a picture of such a distribution, which you can easily get out of a field theory model with n scalar fields, and we did, has this kind of appearance, where here's the origin of some coupling. It's getting contributions from n sectors. The bare contribution scales like n. But the fluctuations just go like root n. And so indeed, the distribution is a Gaussian, and it's pretty peaked, far away from, for instance, the origin in this kind of example. Now, in such a landscape, if for some reason you were to land in one, even scanning the cosmological constant well enough to get 10 to the minus 120, however many back here you have, can require symmetry, a beautiful reason why it's possible. And the canonical example is R symmetries and supersymmetry, which give you a reason that zero energy is preferred. Now, both to see if such other values of this effective K over N show up, and to develop more confidence in the landscape idea as a whole, that doesn't depend on just details of one corner of the theory, it will be very useful to develop another corner of M theory in the same detail as type 2b. Which is not to say that type 2b shouldn't be developed in more detail. And one simple proposal for a next corner to beat to death is type 2a. Okay. What's simple about type 2a? Well, you can again consider type 2a on a Calabi-Yau and get much of the structure of n equals 2 supersymmetry, which gives computability. Okay. But the structure of the fluxes is very different. In 2a, unlike in 2b, there are fluxes of both even and odd dimension. There are 0, 2, 4, and 6 forms in the RR sector, and a 3 form in the NS sector. Now, turning on fluxes corresponds by, there's a continuum of work that's gone into this statement, which I haven't cited here, to gauging n equals 2 supergravities. And so the potential that you get by doing this can be computed two ways, one by dimensional reduction on the Calabi-Yau, the other by using the gauged supergravity formalism and computing the potential in terms of the prepotentials and such that came from the Calabi-Yau. And you can compare and verify that they agree. The gauging in this particular case is that the Ramon-Dermone fluxes give the dilaton charges under various vector multiplets, and the Yanebo-Schwarz fluxes give graviphoton charges to various hypermultiplets. And if you just explicitly reduce the flux kinetic and potential terms in 10D on the Calabi-Yau, then the 4D potential is indeed that which arises by gauging, determined completely by the n equals 2 prepotential up to exponentially small corrections in 1 over g, and quaternionic metric on the hypermultiple moduli space. And in particular, via the Ramon-Ramon and NS fluxes, this potential depends explicitly right away on the KOR complex and dilaton moduli, okay, without adding anything else. So in other words, the flux-generated superpotential actually depends on all geometrical moduli of the Calabi-Yau space. In general models, it actually turns out not to depend on all moduli. There are some axions that escape it. But in special examples, you can get the axions, too. Now, what's the story with tadpoles? Well, in 2A on a Calabi-Yau, there's only one kind of brain you can wrap to get a space-filling object. It's a D6 brain on a 3-cycle. So each kind of D6 charge leads to a potential tadpole. And those come by integrating over a given 3-cycle the zero-form flux wedged with the 3-form flux. Okay. So where the sigma alpha here is some basis for H3. Now, the upshot of this very simple advertisement is that both at the n equals 2 level, without ever breaking supersymmetry by oriental folding to n equals 1, and at the n equals 1 level, if you allow tadpoles that come from the oriental fold action and then include the O planes and so forth, okay, 2A on a Calabi-Yau with generic flux can have all geometric moduli fixed. Now, this story, the way I described it, was developed in collaboration with Amir Kashani, who's at Stanford, and with Oliver and Alexander Gurevitz and Wadi Taylor, we're now going through and explicitly beating to death one of the simplest models of type 2A compactification, that on the so-called Z orbifold T6 mod Z3. And Oliver will say a lot more about the actual equations that go into this in his talk. So this can be done without any non-perturbative effects, yes, at the level of ADS vacua. For DS vacua, or for vacua that have small enough volume that I would consider them very interesting, I think you'll probably have to include a certain class of non-perturbative effects, but those which are inherited from the n equals 2 theory, and so known by mirror symmetry. OK, now, there are very related works to all of this. I presented it the way I think about it. Grimm and Lewis, Derendinger et al., List et al., Berndt and Svetich, have worked on very similar things and may think about it the same way or differently. Now, in fact, these 2A models are not quite, but almost, dual to a class of M-theory compactifications that's been discussed recently. You see, you can get four-dimensional n equals 1 supersymmetry in M-theory by compactifying on a space of G2 holonomy. And Acharya and Deneff recently wrote a very nice paper analyzing the statistics of those models. Now, those models are kind of hard to be explicit in simply because our examples of G2 spaces are still kind of in their infancy. They're all orbifolds that are blown up. But they did statistics of these G2 vacua by just making what I consider to be pretty reasonable assumptions about the form of the Kalor potential and superpotential. And under those reasonable assumptions, they got what I would call friendly distributions. Okay, by friendly, again, I mean they get these very peaked distributions. So for instance, here's the distribution from their paper of cosmological constants. You see that it's peaked at some non-zero value very sharply, very different from the 2B case. And the key point, obviously, is just that the relevant k minus n or k over n in type 2a is much smaller than that in type 2b. In type 2b, you have many more fluxes than moduli. Now, what does that really mean? Is there any significance that we should ascribe to this fact? Well, okay, to be honest, we know about mirror symmetry, and we know that the mirror of a 2b Calabi-Yau compactification with generic flux isn't 2a on a Calabi-Yau, but a large class of them, not all, can be obtained by taking 2A on a Calabi-Yau and turning on certain non-Kalerity, DJ, okay, to get a mirror superpotential. And if you took that into account and the kinds of non-geometric models that I gather Simeon spoke about yesterday, it's pretty plausible that including all those effects, you get broader distributions more analogous to type 2B. Okay? Duality certainly hints that that ought to be true. But that's not a decisive observation, because a relevant question in any real use of this whole formalism would be the relative stiffness of the various parameters in the low energy effective theory. And while duality may relate exact supersymmetric quantities, it could be that potential barriers which are low in one theory are high in another. And so while formally the numbers of vacua line up, the barriers and the relevant tunneling rates don't line up. In which case, you could imagine that really in some corners of the landscape, you should restrict your attention to the things that are least stiff. In which case, the more friendly distributions could be relevant. Now, again, to go in the completely other direction of unfriendliness, I should say that it's clear to me we're probably still missing most classes of vacua, not just on the general grounds of ignorance, which is always a good excuse, but on very concrete grounds. If you take the n equals 2 supergravity that arises from a Calabi-Yau, all the known flux compactifications so far correspond to very special gaugings of that n equals 2 supergravity. You then orient a fold, inherit that potential, and use it to your heart's content. But it's just obvious, staring at that n equals 2 supergravity, that so far the fluxes have been sampling kind of measure zero in the space of possible gaugings. There are many more gaugings for which we don't know a string theory interpretation. And it seems very likely to me that all these gaugings can be realized in some way, though they're still unrealized via fluxes. And so this story will have to continue to evolve, and if nothing else, will teach us about the most generic string compactifications. So I'm actually done. Thanks.
We have time for a few questions. Conrad?
Oh, no, not at all. What I was saying is that given a Calabi-Yau compactification, which is a very specific class of n equals 2 theories, so far our experience has been that for those particular n equals 2 theories, we can derive the relative gauge supergravities, which are a discrete family. They're not all possible n equals 1 theories or even all possible imaginable gauge n equals 2 theories. They're those arising from Calabi-Yau compactifications with certain discrete deformations. So I was certainly not saying that I think all possible effective Lagrangians with a certain amount of supersymmetry are derivable from string theory.
Simeon?
How do you interpret this gauging of things which aren't really symmetry?